Well, you know, one thing I love about fall, yeah, you get some crisp, chilly mornings, and then it warms up some, and you get a few good weekends. I remember even a couple Thanksgiving weekends over the last 20 years. It was balmy, over 70. You went down to Cape May. It was beautiful. And really, this is the time to go with the family. Look at some of the leaves, even now, just starting to change color. Bird migrations, other animals, just a time to get out and appreciate nature. And joining me live in studio, an old friend, Jim White, Associate Director of Land and Biodiversity for the Delaware Nature Society, co-author with his wife, Amy, Amphibians and Reptiles of Delmarva. If you want to identify a frog or something more exotic, he's your guy. How are you doing, Jim?
I'm doing great, Alan. It's great to be here.
Yeah, well, thank you so much. Sure. So we'll start out generally, just what to look for this time of year in terms of plants and animals. I guess the fall foliage just about now starting to go through its beautiful coloration cycle.
Yeah, I mean, as you just said, fall is an amazing time here in Delaware, in the Mid-Atlantic states. It seems to go on forever. You know, you think all of a sudden winter is here, and then next thing you know, you get 2 or 3 days of beautiful, mild weather. So I really enjoy the fall, and I think it's one of the best times to get outside. It tends to be relatively dry, as actually the whole month of September was, and most of October until yesterday. So it tends to be a really good time to get out. The weather's not too hot, not too cold. But a lot of us naturalists or people interested in nature, we, of course, do a lot of hiking and looking for things. The one thing that this time of year is great for birds, as you mentioned. Hawk migration is in full swing. I know at the Ashland Nature Center, we have a hawk watch, and they're getting all kinds of great birds coming through. And it's a really good time of year to look up into the sky. Also, it's a great time of year to see some of the more birds that aren't very commonly noticed. The brown, little brown guys, we call them, or little brown jobs, sparrows. We just had a great lecture last night at the Delaware Ornithological Society by Mike Moore on sparrow identification. But sparrows are a great little bird to go look for this time of year.
Yeah, well, it seems like in so many classifications of animals, first you get attracted by the ones that are brightly colored, and then if you really get into it, there are so many animal families where you got kind of the drab-looking ones, and then it's more the specialists who have already seen all the gaudy ones, so they're looking for the ones that are tougher to identify to species.
Yeah, that's very true. Yeah, you start out looking at the very showy butterflies and the showy moths, like monarchs and some of the luna moths. And then after a while, like you, Alan, start looking at these little, very nondescript things.
Yes.
But they're very important in the world of biodiversity, just as important as the showy moths. So it is a lot of fun to start to identify or at least get familiar with some of the non-showy animals out there.
And we'll look to get into that further in a moment. But what about your specialty, reptiles, amphibians, and then, of course, mammals? Well, we well know as motorists about deer suddenly appearing. Mm-hmm. Where they shouldn't be this time of year.
Well, the as far as reptiles, this is actually a pretty good time of year to see reptiles, especially snakes and turtles. And that's because the nights tend to be very cool. So the animals start to become more diurnal. They come out in the daytime because they need the heat from the sun. So I'm this time of year, I get a lot of reports of people finding snakes in the yard, sunning in the backyard. Typically, these are common snakes like the eastern garter snake, or sometimes the eastern rat snake.
I mean, we still don't have people who suddenly worry it's poisonous and try to kill them, do we?
Oh, yeah, there are. But it's nowhere near as common as it used to be.
Yeah.
So I will grant you that. I remember starting out 36 years ago, and I often got calls from people who were just deadly afraid of snakes to the point where they killed everyone they saw. You don't see that as much anymore. At least I don't see it as much.
Good to know. And especially in our part of the country where you don't have venomous snakes. But I guess every time we do this on the air, somebody emails me and says, I didn't know that. The one place in Newcastle County where venomous snakes occur.
Yeah, we do have one venomous snake in Delaware or on Delmarva Peninsula, and that's the copperhead. It is a relatively small snake, but it is found in Delaware. In the northern part of the state here, it's found only in Alpocas Woods, which is, I think it's still in the city limits of Wilmington.
But you really kind of have to look for
You do have to
them.
Look for them, and you got to know where they kind of are. Although I have had a few people call me or send me pictures. that they just kind of were hiking there. It is a favorite spot to walk.
Yeah.
And they'll see them sometimes sunning on the walkways. But they're not typically that dangerous unless you try to pick one up.
Yeah, I mean, they'll try to get away from you typically.
Oh, yeah. Or that, or they'll ignore you totally. They'll sit there thinking they're camouflaged, and you know, because they do make... they stay alive because they are camouflaged in most situations.
Oh, they don't want to step on some leaves that are over a snake.
Yeah. I mean, you do have to watch your step in Alpocas. But the other place we find them is in southern Delaware.
Yeah, southern half of Sussex.
Sussex County, yeah.
Other than that, everything here is...
is non-venomous, other than those things.
But New Jersey's got some, even south.
Well, New Jersey has rattlesnakes even, even as close as the Pine Barrens. So they have a relic population of rattlesnakes. Now, rattlesnakes probably did occur in Delaware at one time. In fact, there's some old records in newspapers of people reporting them. But they probably were extirpated as the settlers moved in here.
And I got to say, I mean, I've been in the Pine Barrens nearly every summer, once or twice, and I've never seen a rattlesnake.
And that's true. I've been there a lot, and I've never seen one
also. It's not like they're commonly around. Of course, if you lift up boards and logs, you have a better chance of seeing something.
Yes, and the populations are probably... concentrated in certain areas.
Yeah. What about frogs, other amphibians?
Well, the frogs are out there, but they're not breeding. This is not a time of breeding, so they tend to be pretty secretive. If you have a pond or you're around a pond, you'll still see bullfrogs and green frogs and pickerel frogs. But with this cool weather, they're going to start to hibernate. They're going to start to go down.
You're not going to hear them as much.
No, the only frog really going to hear this time of year is the spring peeper. And it makes a peeping sound, but it's not doing it at the breeding pools. It's doing it up in the woods. So it's just a very, it's not a large chorus. It's just one or two calling every once in a while on a warm day.
Mammals?
Well, mammals are very active this time
still
of
out,
year.
Yeah,
they're very active because they're trying to build up their fat. Of course, deer are very active right now. In fact, this is deer hunting season.
Too active.
Well, sometimes too active in certain areas.
And bear hunting season in New Jersey.
Yeah. And bears, yeah. Well, we don't have any bear population in Delaware, although one did make its way through here a couple of years ago. Yeah,
I still remember. Then it ended up in Maryland.
I think it made to Maryland, yeah.
Right by the river.
Yes.
So, well, you mentioned butterflies, moths, insects. Great time for dragonflies, great time for butterflies, monarch migration.
Yeah.
Almost over, but they're still turning up in Cape May.
Yeah, I mean, for as far as insect watching, butterfly watching or dragonfly watching, it is starting to wind down. A lot of the dragonflies have basically died. They only go through one summer. However, there are certain dragonflies that are around. They actually migrate, like the green darner. And there's a few other species, like the black saddlebags. So there are still dragonflies out there to watch. And one of the, and you know this, Alan, one of the kind of fun things that we do as nature nerds, I call myself, is to try to find the latest date that you can find an insect.
A particular species.
Yeah, a particular species. And then we call that late dates.
Yes.
So we try to find the farthest into the fall or winter that we can find a species.
Well, I got a thing called a flower moth, a chenille, after Thanksgiving last year, you know.
Yep. And today it's kind of neat. It's really, in the last 5-6 years, it's become a lot more fun because you can actually report your sighting on the internet in some of these apps called, like, iNaturalist.
Right.
You can report your sighting, and you can compare that to other people's sightings.
What they're seeing.
Yes, and you can see if yours is later than theirs, and it's a lot of fun.
Well, I fear always when we have these discussions getting into the weeds, and I intend that as a joke and also as a phrase for, you know, getting too technical.
Yeah.
But what are the initial tips you give to people? Maybe a family want to go out with the kids, get them to appreciate nature, get them off their phones and devices. How would you do that? What do you think is the easy... I mean, you work with kids.
Right, sure.
Well, what's the easiest way to try to instill a renewed appreciation for the outdoors and getting away from all the electronic devices?
Well, I know... Well, I had two boys, and so I had this issue. And, you know, of course, my first instinct would have been, oh, take them out there and show them all this cool nature.
Yeah.
Well, yes, that's not quite the way to do it with kids. I like to take them out on activities that, such as biking... such as, you know, trying to hike from here to there at a certain speed, give them a little bit of adventure, and then along the way, point out the really interesting things, whether that be a bird, whether that be a dragonfly. try not to get them, as you say, too far in the weeds right away. It's like that old joke, you take your, or not joke, but saying, you know, if you want to teach your child to fish, take them fishing, but don't take them too much.
Yeah. And for the parent, of course, there's all kinds of sources on the internet now, but I guess just get a couple basic books.
Yeah, well, of course, I really still believe in books, especially for young kids. Reading a book is very valuable in many, many ways. So I know with our boys, we bought lots of books that were designed for their age, and they love them, and they would read them about it. And they you know, they're learning about nature, but they're also learning to read. They're learning to appreciate different types of literature.
Well, back to fall season, I don't know how many schools do this. We had to, second or third grade, have to try to pick up many different leaves, leaf shapes, and try to identify them.
Yeah, and I think teachers are still doing that today. I know in our programs at the ONH Society, at the Ashland Nature Center, and some of our other sites like the Pond Environmental Center, we still have leaf programs, and we take them out and we let them go out and collect leaves, and then we tell them what that tree, what leaf that tree came from. So yeah, and it's a lot of fun. And whenever you can get a child to handle something or find it on their own, I think that's a huge benefit in teaching.
Which is one of the reasons I know there's been a movement among entomologists, insect people, that you photograph. You don't literally pick up, unless, of course, you're a scientist or amateur scientist. You want to dissect something, which works to a point. But I've always said, kids are never going to get interested in this stuff unless they can feel it and play with it.
Right. I totally agree. I don't think we need to be totally hands-off. I think there's a smart way to allow children to handle and experience nature in a very active way. I love taking kids into streams. I like taking them into ponds, into fields. Isolating them from the habitats or the animals in the habitats probably is not a good idea.
You mentioned streams. White Clay Creek has had a program over the years.
Oh, yes, yes. And stream programs are one of the favorite programs for kids. I know my wife, Amy, she still teaches stream programs for the Nature Center. She taught two yesterday, yes.
Back to leaves. How many species do we have in our area of trees?
Oh, geez. Oh, that's a good question. But
and
we probably have
more complicated shrubs.
At least 150,
too,
probably. Yeah.
And just like with certain animals, some are real finds or very, very rare.
Yeah. And it's interesting you bring this up, because as we speak, my assistant is taking the state botanist down into one of our properties because we found an American chestnut tree, which most have extinct or extirpated.
You don't hear that name very often.
And my assistant and another guy found a pretty good size one. So they're right now looking for that. So
Where was that?
This was at the Coverdale Farm Preserve. And my wife's there with them right now. I couldn't be there because I'm here.
Yeah.
So yeah, there are very common trees and there are some that aren't so common. And that's kind of fun to try to identify trees. And you can identify trees all times of year. You can identify them by their leaves in the summer, their bark in the winter. So there's lots of ways to do it.
Have you sadly seen more defoliation of trees, whether from insects or maybe even pollution or just
trees? I actually haven't. I mean, we did go through a spell, I think you'll sure remember this, 20-some years ago with the gypsy moth.
Yeah.
But in our area, we're not getting that defoliation. However, if you move up to into Pennsylvania, you'll see
lanternfly.
Well, not the lanternfly yet. But I mean, it's there, but as far as I know, it's not defoliating too much. But there's other plants that are, other trees that are being defoliated by insects. Now, we can talk about the lanternfly if you like.
Yeah, we'll get into that. And the other thing is, and a lot of us don't pay much attention to it for obvious reasons, but where you start to have exotic plants from other places kind of take over from native plants. And just like with animals, that's never good.
No, it is a big problem here in the Mid-Atlantic and throughout much of the United States. These are plants that were brought over here from other parts of the world, typically the Orient.
Yeah, but often not for always. Decorative reasons.
Oh, yeah, either for decorative or for food or for some were brought over for actually wildlife habitat back in the 60s and 70s. And these species, some of them, you know, at least 25 to 30 have become real problems.
You always wonder if you bring in an exotic species of something, whether it's going to be a problem or not. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
I mean, like ginkgo, ginkgo don't go wild all over the place. You can plant one in your yard. Do we ever know whether a particular exotic species is going to become a problem if it's introduced somewhere or not? Or
what?
Is it, you know, trial and error, unfortunately.
It's a lot of trial and error. Unfortunately, they don't really test plants when they bring them in, like insects. If you wanted to bring an insect in, it would have to go through all kinds of testing. They don't really test plants. Now, a good botanist can look at a species and see its life history. What? How does it make a living? Does it throw out lots and lots of seeds? And are all those seeds blowing in the wind? Or are they they put out berries that birds like? So you can make an assumption, but typically we find out when it's almost too late.
Yeah. Well, I know certainly you tell someone at the U.S.-Canadian border or Mexican border that you're bringing in something alive, and they'll cast you aside and take your license to ascertain what you're bringing into the country.
Yeah, you don't want to move things around, either on purpose or accidentally.
In Upper Michigan, there are all these signs when you cross the bridge about don't bring this into Upper Michigan.
Oh, yes, yes. There's, again, you know, the pest can be...
Firewood, too.
Firewood, yeah, because lots of insects will bury in a firewood and they'll be moved around by firewood. And right now, you can't bring firewood into Delaware. But
then you get to, how is it enforced?
Well, yeah, how is it enforced? That's a good point. But
most
citizens probably will obey it, but you never know. I mean, there's always some that might ignore it or not know about it.
And of course, I'm getting away from nature walks. We'll get back into that. But the other thing is, I think with our global transportation, communications, more stuff is being brought in inadvertently. Mm-hmm. You know, a organism of some sort hitchhikes a ride, and it ends up over here. I mean, I found a Japanese moth on the bark of a tree near Nottingham.
That's happening all the time.
So far, not known to be destructive, but,
exactly.
And then it takes a while to get it identified because, you know.
I had a great example of that just 2 weeks ago. A friend of mine, John Herod, I'll mention his name, who's a great friend. He was in Texas, and he was visiting his brother, and he came home. And a day later, I believe it was a day later, his wife said, "What is that lizard on the wall here in Wilmington in his house?"
Ah.
And he said, "Oh, there's no lizards in Delaware. I mean, no geckos in Delaware."
Yeah.
So he looked at it. Sure enough, one of these, a Mediterranean house gecko, had hitchhiked in his luggage from Texas to Delaware.
Wow.
So that's, and now I have that lizard at home in a jar. So he's not going anywhere.
That's right. You'll take precautions so it doesn't escape. Jim White, Associate Director, Land and Biodiversity Management, Delaware Nature Society, co-author with his wife, Amy, Amphibians and Reptiles of Delmarva. We're talking about the great outdoors, in particular this time of year, you getting your family out away from the electronic devices for some solitude, peace, which is good for your heart and your health, I think. Mm-hmm. And just, you know, we don't do enough of that anymore, and that is sad, I think.